Welcome to the Boston Public Library and the Boston Book Festival, everyone. We're so delighted to see you all here first thing in the morning. So this morning, we're going to be talking about middle grade fantasy, and we have some really, really wonderful authors who will be sharing with you today. I do want to acknowledge, before we get started, someone who wasn't here to join us. If you've been following the festival from the beginning, you might have seen that Ben Hatke was initially on this panel. He unfortunately had a really terrible tragedy in his family, and I did want to let people know that if you would like to support his family, his books still are for sale outside. If you or anyone you know loves graphic novels that are full of adventure and joy and fantasy, I highly suggest these really delightful books, and that would be a wonderful way to support him and his family in a truly, truly terrible time for them. But saying that, on a sad note, now let's move on to something really delightful, which is the people who we do have here in front of us today. I'd like to introduce you to these wonderful authors. We'll have a few minutes from each of them to tell you a little bit about their books. We'll have some time for conversation. And then at the end, we will have time for questions. And I am going to ask that any kids and teens in this audience have their questions go first. So if you are a young person and you think you might have a question, get your bravery together, get that question in your mind, and get ready. We're going to start down on the end, and let's introduce you to Jen. Jen Cervantes is the New York Times bestselling author of both realistic and fantasy stories that center Latinx kids. And her new series is from Rick Riordan Presents, the Stormrunner series, which are truly delightful magic, where a young man is thrust into a world that he has no idea was around him. You'll hear more about Jen's books shortly. Next, we have Katie Zhao. This is her debut novel, but her writing has already been read by more than a million people on Wattpad, if anybody has had the delight of reading. Her first book is called The Dragon Warrior, and this is a book that goes through Chinatowns across the United States into incredible fantasy worlds. And finally, next to me, Catherine Lasky is also a New York Times bestselling author of a tremendous number of books for children, including the Newbery Honor winner Sugaring Time. Her new series, Tangled in Time, the first book called The Portal is out, and you can find today. But on October 29th, the second in the series will be coming out, and Catherine will be at Belmont Books. So let's hear from each of these ladies today. Let's start down on the end with Jen.
Okay. Well, is my microphone on? I think it is. Okay. Can everyone hear me? Good. All right. Well, I'm really happy to be here. Believe it or not, I've traveled a lot in my lifetime. I've never been to Boston. This is my first time, and it's a beautiful, beautiful city. So thank you all for showing up here this morning for us and being so welcoming. I was born and raised in San Diego, California. I'm of Mexican descent, and I was an avid reader as a kid. I mean, I read anything that I could get my hands on. It didn't matter whether it was a book, a magazine, books I probably shouldn't have been reading, the back of my cereal box. I loved, loved, loved language. And I loved it so much that I actually learned this really unusual skill that has been really helpful to me at school visits. So as middle grade authors, we do a lot where we go into schools and we talk to kids about writing and books. And so I learned to read, write, and talk backwards. And yeah, so so it's a lot of fun. So if any kids are here, if you want to hear your name backwards, come up to me after, and I will tell you your name backwards. So I grew up in San Diego. I grew up actually near the Tijuana border, and I grew up with these stories that were kind of this mishmash of not just Maya and Aztec mythology, but also La Llorona, if you're familiar with the weeping ghost by the river, and Chupacabra, the blood-sucking monster. And so my grandmother would tell me these stories, and she would kind of lace them all together, and they were terrifying. And as a kid, I remember being so scared, and I thought, oh gosh, I gotta go to bed tonight, and I don't want to hear these stories. But then she'd say, well, do you want me to stop? And I'd say, no, okay, just tell me a little bit more. And so I absolutely love these stories, and so it's been such an honor to be able to bring those stories to life now as an adult. I live in New Mexico now, and otherwise known as the Land of Enchantment. Has anybody been to New Mexico? Yeah, it's beautiful, right? Absolutely beautiful, and it is a very inspirational place, and I think that there's a reason that it's called the Land of Enchantment. There's something so magical about not just the geography, but you know the nature itself. I live in the high desert, and I live up on this hill, and it overlooks the city, and then beyond the city is a ribbon. It's a green valley, the Rio Grande Valley, and river, and then beyond that is the mesa, and then you can't see past that. And so I was sitting out on my portal one night, and I'm looking out, and I'm watching the sunset, and I'm paying attention to all of these volcanoes that are out on the mesa. And they're dormant volcanoes, And I'd lived there for a long time, and I'd never really given a lot of thought to these volcanoes. But like all of my stories, it began with what if. And I thought, you know, what if something lived in one of those volcanoes that was really dark and scary? So I start drawing on these images and these stories that my grandmother had told me. And so that's how Zane was born. And if you haven't read The Storm Runner is about a young boy who lives in New Mexico. He's 13 years old. He has a physical disability. One leg is shorter than the other, so he walks with a cane. And he's been homeschooled for the last year. And so the book opens with his mother telling him, you know, it's time that you go back to school. And Zane, of course, thinks this is the worst fate imaginable until something really terrifying crashes into his volcano and throws his life into a complete tailspin, and he finds out that he's in the middle of a Mayan prophecy. And so he goes on this adventure where he has to come face to face with Alpuish, the god of death, darkness, and destruction, and in the meantime meets all of these wonderful characters from Nawals, who are shapeshifters, to giants, to Alushes, to gods, demons, underworld demons. And so it's a very frightening place for him, especially because he feels like he doesn't have the physical capacity to do it. But we soon find out that what he thought was a weakness ends up being an incredible strength for him. So if you haven't read it, I hope you'll get an opportunity to do so. And thank you so much for having me here.
Thank you very much, Jen.
Thank you.
Sorry, I'm writing down stuff that I want to talk about when we get to things. Let's hear from Katie.
All right. Is my mic on? Okay, perfect. All right, so I'm Katie Zhao. I am the debut author of The Dragon Warrior, so that means this is my very first published novel that came out on October 15th. So I've been an author for, I think, 4 or 5 days now, and it's just, it's really strange. Thank you. It's really, really strange to call myself an author, but I have definitely been a writer for a very long time. I still remember the first time I wrote a short story when I was 7 or 8 years old, and it was just like a short story assignment for school. I was in, I think, second or third grade. And I just remember I always loved reading, and then writing was just, it was an even more magical experience. I remember writing the story and thinking, that was so much fun. And the teacher actually told me, oh, that was a really good story. And it probably wasn't a very good story. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I was really excited by her praise. And I think I knew at that moment that, you know, no matter what, I would always want to keep writing. I knew I wanted to do something with writing. So I was born and raised in Michigan. Has anyone been to Michigan, visited Michigan? Yeah, it's a really, really lovely state. So I lived there for my entire life, pretty much. I went to school at the University of Michigan. Go Blue. Oh, wow, I didn't know that. Cool. Okay, cool. Fellow Wolverines. I studied English in undergrad, and then my parents weren't very happy with that. A lot of, maybe like some of the Asian folks in the crowd can relate, but Asian parents tend to lean more toward the math, engineering, like science, being like a doctor, that's like a thing. I didn't want to be a doctor. I didn't want anything to do with math at all. I was a writer. I was a reader and a writer. I'd always loved reading and writing. And so after I graduated undergrad, my mom kind of encouraged me to pursue a master's of accounting. She's an accountant, so it kind of makes sense. She wanted me to follow her path. And so I did it. I gave in. I did a 1-year master's of accounting at the University of Michigan. And it was during that year that I realized this is really not what I want to be doing. I am not good at numbers. I mean, I can do them. I can do the accounting, but it's not where my heart is. I always knew I was a better reader and writer. So it was during that year that I actually wrote The Dragon Warrior. I'd gotten the idea for The Dragon Warrior earlier in the summer of that year. I just knew I wanted to write a Chinese fantasy, but I wanted to set it in an American context. Because growing up, I had both sides of, you know, enjoying the rich stories from Chinese culture and then enjoying Percy Jackson and Harry Potter and all these great middle grade American fantasies. But I had never really seen any protagonists who looked like me in those stories. And I'd never really seen any stories that reflected the more Chinese side of my childhood. And, you know, China's such a huge country with a really long history and a beautiful, beautiful culture. So for me, I really wanted to see a story that reflected my upbringing and that really reflected the kind of hero that, you know, I wanted other Chinese Americans to be able to relate to. So that's where the inspiration of The Dragon Warrior came from. And I wrote it very fast because I really didn't want to do accounting. And so I threw all my energy into writing this novel. and revising it and revising and revising it. And I got my agent that same year. So a lot happened that year, but not much related to accounting. I just sort of skated by. I actually wrote some of my story during my lecture. But please don't tell my professors. And kids, please pay attention in your classes. Don't be like me. That was not very smart on my part. But I guess it all worked out in the end. I got a book deal for The Dragon Warrior. This was all like a whirlwind turn of events because, as was said before, I'd been writing for a long time. I was writing online. I wrote on this website called Figment that I heard was shut down already. I started writing on Wattpad, if anyone knows what that is. It's like, I guess, like a digital platform where, you know, writers can post their stories on there, and then anyone who wants to read free stories that probably aren't that great can get on there and read them, and, you know, you kind of get feedback and learn how to write a story that will attract more readers. So I'd been practicing for a long time, and finally, you know, I was stepping into the world of actually becoming an author. So it was just all very exciting to me, and I guess some of more of the inspiration behind The Dragon Warrior and the reason why it's set across Chinatowns is because my family would take family vacations all across the U.S. when I was younger, and in every new place, we would try to find a Chinatown. So it was almost like we were on our own little quest throughout the U.S., and I think Chinatowns are really special because they're kind of like little pockets of home, or like a home away from home. And they're like the closest that you can get to feeling like you're in China without actually going back to China, which is really expensive. So we did like the next best alternative. And yeah, that's the reason why Farron, the protagonist, is just journeying across all these Chinatowns. She's also searching for a sense of home. And I think that was something that I was also always searching for when I was younger, was just this feeling of feeling close to both sides of me, you know, my Chinese side and then my American side. And, you know, I could always find a sense of that in Chinatown. So that's just a little about me and a little bit about The Dragon Warrior.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you.
And let's hear from Catherine.
Okay, I have a question.
Yes.
Did you ever go and not find a Chinatown in any place?
Yeah, well, so there's not a Chinatown in every city, obviously. I think we went to the one in San Francisco. That one's beautiful. It's huge. And they have like the best bubble tea. We've been to a couple in New York. We've been to the one in Boston. We've been to the one in D.C. and Chicago. But there are more that they're like smaller, I don't think.
But you never were disappointed.
Like, we tried it. Well, we always
knew never found
that.
Not found one.
Well, I think my parents knew, like, before we went there was a Chinatown there. We didn't ever, like, go somewhere, expect a Chinatown. We're like, wow, what the heck, you know?
Oh. Okay. Well, I'm Catherine, and I grew up in Indiana, but I am so much older than these guys. I've lived in Cambridge for several decades. And I have been writing for several decades, but I was a teacher at one time. So my latest book, I've written a lot of fantasy, but I've never done time travel. And I have done these Tangled in Time series, first two. And it's sort of like I have a foot not in just two time periods, but two worlds. So the heroine of this story grows up is located in Indianapolis, Indiana, where I grew up, and she has been orphaned and sent to live with a grandmother that she hardly knows in her grandmother's house, which was actually my grandmother's house. And there's a big greenhouse, which becomes a portal for her to the 16th century Tudor world and the Tudor family in England. And why that? I loved English history as a kid. I just did. And why did I pick the Tudor period? Because all the others were absolutely boring in comparison. the short answer also is I like the people and I like the clothes. And this is something that people can't quite imagine, how much research you have to do for fantasy. And I know I'm known for my animal fantasy, and lucky for me, I live about 500 yards, if that, from the Harvard Museum, Peabody, well, now they call them Harvard Natural History Museum. So when I did my owl books, I went over there, I talked with all the bird people. when I did the Wolf books, I went there, and then I went out to a wolf refuge. And I have got to get at the natural history of these creatures down pat. And then I can fly with them, so to speak. And there was a movie made out of my OWL series called Legend of the Guardians, and the animators, their working title for it was Owls in Helmets, which I didn't. But the helmets didn't come in until I really knew about owls. The Tudor period is great because, to me, well, that was the glorious Technicolor time of English history. After that, I mean, George III, what a twit. But Elizabeth, what a powerful woman. And I think that's about it. But
wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
So now that we've heard a little bit about all of these tremendous books, I want to start by bringing up a quote that was at the beginning of Jen's first book in this series. The beginning quote was from Madeline L'Engle and was just a very short, I think, really lovely quote, "Believing takes practice." And one of the things that I think I see through middle grade fantasy and certainly through all of these books is that you have to convince not just the reader in this world, but also the kid who's central to the story. They have to be part of that belief because they are suddenly thrown somewhere sort of outside of themselves. Can you talk a little bit about that process in your books? Or that quote, if it's meaningful for you.
Sure. So I think one of the reasons that I really love that quote is, and this, I don't know, you guys tell me if you feel this way, but I have found that fantasy writers especially, we're always looking for magic. And we're always believing that, okay, there is a portal right beyond this. Or if I do this, then I'm going to enter this world. And so there's this imagination that I think goes with being a fantasy writer that is not just part of our writing process, but as a part of our everyday life. And I can tell you that even as a Latina, as many of you probably have read magical realism, but that idea is also even stronger from a cultural perspective in my family, that there is this sense of magic in the everyday that is not necessarily labeled magic. And so that quote has always been really meaningful to me for exactly that, and the fact that I think most people are, and not just fantasy writers, but I think that most people are looking for that thing that kind of makes their heart pitter-patter, or something that's going to inspire them, or make the difference, or create meaning in their life. And so I think there are so many ways to look at that quote, but that was probably one of the reasons that I wanted to include it.
Anybody else have any response to that, or want to talk about belief in their
life? Well, I had written down this quote that I found in Neil Gaiman said this, and it really applies, I think. It says, "Everybody has a secret world inside of them. All of the people of the world, I mean everybody, no matter how dull and boring they are on the outside, inside they've got unimaginable, magnificent, wonderful, stupid, amazing worlds, hundreds of them, maybe thousands." And I think that is so true, because I think a lot of writers consider themselves sort of boring on the outside, you know? And I sort of do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, that's lovely. One of the things I think that sort of comes off of what you just said that I really found in all these books, one thing that I loved about these, I love stories where kids, everyday kids, are suddenly thrown into a different world. So these aren't fantasy stories where Katie's a little bit, where you sort of are already within that world, it's already around the kids, but they are thrown in all of a sudden, and they have to sort of learn about this world that's all around them at the same time that you're having to help kids learn what these gods who may never have heard of before, help kids learn about these historical figures who they may never have heard of before. How did you approach that process of sort of introducing these worlds that kids might never have had the chance to respond to?
Oh, I guess I'll start off. So for me, writing Chinese mythology was, I mean, I sort of had to give myself a crash course on Chinese mythology. I knew some from just, you know, my
my background, I grew up watching this classic Chinese cartoon called Journey to the West, or Xiaoji in Chinese. And it was one of my favorite things to watch growing up. And I remember my sisters and I, it was like the cartoon that we would watch like as like a Saturday morning cartoon. So we'd spend hours watching this cartoon. And so, I mean, my research mostly was rewatching the cartoons, which was like the most fun I've ever had researching. And then I also just, I had some help from different guidebooks. I went online. I learned as much as I could about Chinese mythology. But it was definitely hard trying to introduce all of these concepts and terms into the story because I was very well aware that I wasn't writing for a mostly Chinese audience. I was writing for mostly an audience that had no idea like who all these gods and goddesses were, what all these terms were. So I think it helped that I had a lot of readers who I reached out to who weren't Chinese. So they would tell me, "Oh, this part doesn't make sense. Look, I don't know where this came from. Can you please explain this term?" So I feel like I was able to get through that with a lot of their help, but it definitely took a lot of digging on my part. And it was also interesting just because, you know, I come from a Chinese American background. I was raised in a very like Asian household, I would want to say. There are like very distinct cultural differences between an Asian family and a non-Asian family. And so I think with some of the readers, they might not quite understand, you know, certain why the characters would do certain things in the novel. But I think it just takes, you know, stepping away from the story and realizing this is coming from a different cultural background and appreciating the novel in that sense.
So Catherine, I know you said that you really had responded to this time when you were a child. How did you feel about introducing this time and these historical figures to kids?
Well, my first exposure to English history was in the seventh grade, and I just absolutely adored it. Then my next exposure was, and I don't know whether I'm sure there are not kids in this audience who remember the Dear America series for Scholastic or the Royal Diary series. Okay, I see a few nods. And I did the first one. At the end, they called me up and they said, "We'd like you to lead off this series." And they told me what figures they were looking for. And they hadn't mentioned Elizabeth the First. I said, "Well, what about Elizabeth?" And they said, oh, you're right. I mean, so I had done so much research on her and that whole period. And one of the things that stuck in my mind was how poor the hygiene was back then. And I really had a blast going further with that. And I'm not going to, this isn't a spoiler. The first book ends with this girl, Rose, who has been the 21st century girl working for Princess Elizabeth. And then the brother, Edward, dies. So that means Mary Tudor, a.k.a. Bloody Mary, becomes queen, and she poaches Elizabeth's servant, Rose. And Rose vows at the end of when Mary makes her get down on her knees and swear allegiance, and she crosses her fingers behind her back. And never, 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 Rose muttered in her head. Her fingers were crossed and still jammed in her pocket. This is the beginning of book two. And she said, "The floor was hard beneath her knees, not wood, but stone or cement." That's, she's transitioned back to her grandmother's greenhouse. "And the scent, fresher. And yet she still had her eyes clamped shut. She was almost afraid to open them. The last thing she had been aware of was a slight smell. Yes, Queen Mary of England, who now wanted to enslave her, did have a little body odor problem." And I just love that kind of play. And, you know, I found out things like they didn't have toothbrushes, so they used shredded twigs to brush their teeth. I just love doing that kind of thing. No, it's weird.
Jen, did you have anything you wanted to share about introducing these incredible characters?
Oh, well, you know, so a lot of the language, so there's many, many Mayan languages. People think there's actually hundreds and dialects. And they were they were not an empire the way that the Romans and the Greeks were. They were city-states. And so each of the cities had royalty. They had kings and queens. And I remember going through, and I actually had to work with a couple of Minos because I don't speak any of these languages. And so some of the words are really, really hard. So there is a glossary at the back, but they're also so much fun to say. So, for example, the Maya have a goddess of chocolate. So very unlike any other pantheon in the world, I have not yet found another culture who has that. Yeah. And her name is Ish Cacao. And so once you kind of learn that the IX is Ish, because IX usually denotes a feminine name, then it's kind of easy from there. And I also did lots and lots of research. You know, because the Spanish did colonize the Maya, it was really challenging to find anything that is original. Most of their documents have been burned, with the exception of three codices, and I think one was just recently found in Mexico, and the others are across the world. And so, you know, just doing that from that perspective could be really challenging, but it was also, it was so gratifying and wonderful. And I've been to a lot of these places, and so it was really wonderful to kind of call on those memories as well. But really advanced, beautiful, wonderful civilization, ancient civilization.
I love that both Jen and Catherine today have talked about research in fantasy writing, and I think that's something really incredible to sort of think about, that while you might be building these worlds, you are building them on something, and particularly in all of these books, these are all sort of built in either mythology or religion or true history. I think that's really incredible that that's kind of coming through in all of yours, and something to think about, that research is important whatever you're writing, kind of knowing where you're coming from. I think that also speaks to sort of the idea of sort of fantasy that we typically think of, the elves and orcs, the Tolkien-based fantasy. And one of the things that I think is incredible that's happening today and that we see here in front of us is that we are pushing back on that idea, that sort of elves and orcs fantasy, bringing diversity, bringing different cultures into that mix, particularly with things like the Rick Riordan Presents series. I think middle grade is a place where we are really starting to see that push. How have you seen that reflected, and how has that been important to you as authors?
I guess I'll start off.
Awesome.
So, first of all, I think dragons are way cooler than elves and orcs. But I think, the reason why dragons are so central to the Dragon Warrior is because dragons are seen as like really respectable and powerful creatures in Chinese mythology. And so I felt like if I was going to write a book that was centered around Chinese mythology, I couldn't do one without dragons. And they sort of became very central creatures to the story, and very, very powerful figures. And also, I definitely do agree that we're seeing a lot of diverse representation in middle grade these days, and it's just fantastic to see. I think the Rick Riordan Presents imprint is doing a lovely job with pushing a lot of diverse mythologies out there, and I think it's so important and crucial for middle grade especially. Middle grade is, you know, a genre that anyone can read. You know, I'm older now. I still read middle grade. I think anyone can read it because it's very accessible. And I think, you know, even older readers, we're always reaching back to our childhood. We're always reaching back to that sense of wonderment when you're younger and you feel like anything can exist in the world. And for younger readers who are reading middle grade, it's especially important that they see themselves represented because, you know, readers who are 8 to 12 years old, they're at a very, very impressionable age. And the book that you give that child will kind of shape them into a reader or into a non-reader. And in the same sense, even if they become a reader, they might become a reader who realizes, you know, if they don't see themselves in these stories, maybe they can't be the heroes. I don't know. When I was that age, you know, I loved reading so much. I was the kid who always had a new book in class every single day. And it was usually fantasy, and specifically middle grade fantasy. I really, really loved Harry Potter and Percy Jackson. And just, you know, I just always felt like, especially with contemporary fantasy, it was just really cool to be able to think that something really fantastical and extraordinary could exist in our world. And it could happen to kids who are my age. But it was also kind of unfortunate for me because at that time, middle grade was dominated very heavily by, you know, male protagonists, and, you know, there weren't really any Asian protagonists that I ever saw. I recognized maybe a couple of Asian characters, but they were sort of sidelined, and so the message that I got was, you can be a side character, and you can never really see yourself as the hero in these stories. So for me, I grew up in also kind of a white-dominated area, so I didn't see myself represented, you know, in the real world, and when I escaped into fantasy, I still didn't see myself. So I struggled a lot with my identity. It took me well into my high school years, actually probably even early college years, to be proud of my Chinese and American identities. So, I mean, my hope with The Dragon Warrior is that for Chinese American readers or Asian American readers, when they read the book, maybe they'll see themselves as the heroes in the story, because all the heroes are Asian American. And that, you know, they can be proud of their culture, where they come from. They can be proud of their parents. They can, you know, they can be proud of this journey that they've taken, you know, coming from their country and, you know, making a life, a new legacy in an entirely different country. And just, you know, they can enjoy the stories both from, you know, their home country and from this country. So that was really what I wanted to do with The Dragon Warrior.
You know, I want to definitely applaud Rick Riordan for what he's doing with this imprint. If none of you are familiar with it, he publishes with Disney and decided that he was not the right person, nor did he have the time to tell all of these tales from around the world. And so it's a really wonderful, beautiful thing to see yourself reflected in the pages, but it's also so eye-opening for people who are not from that culture as well, to have this entry point that is so dynamic and it's so accessible. And so, for example, when I think about some of the books just from the Rick Riordan Presents, you know, we're talking about Korean mythology and Hindu mythology and West African mythology and you know, Cuban folklore. And it's been such a pleasure for me to read those books. And I also read The Dragon Warrior, which is fantastic. And I thought it was so fantastic that I blurbed it, so I hope you all will read it. But really, you know, to even for myself, to enter those worlds and to have your eyes open to these other cultures is such a powerful thing. And on top of that, it's not just from that perspective, but I think that it's from, you know, for young people to see that as well and to relate. Because if you think about it, these stories transcend race, class, culture. Absolutely. If you look at what these young people in these stories, and I haven't read your book yet, Catherine, I'm sure it's fabulous. but if you look at what these young people are up against in these stories, there's so much that is a universal theme. I know, for example, in The Storm Runner, when I think about Zane, you know, he wants the sense of belonging. He wants friends. And so that is nothing that is tied to, oh, you know, the Mexican culture or the Korean culture or the Chinese culture. And so I think kids will also see themselves reflected from that standpoint, too, and hopefully get so embedded in that story itself that they come out of it not just learning about that particular ethnic background or that particular culture, but coming out the other side, maybe not even realizing that that's what they've done.
So I think something that really came across for me in all of your stories was these are all characters who have experienced bullying in their lives. And as I think Jen said earlier, all of these characters also are taking things that other kids might be seeing as a weakness and finding strength inside of them. And I think that's true in all of these books, whether it's Catherine's, where sort of her creativity in sewing might be something that other kids are making fun of, but that when she is in tutor times, that is helping her sort of be part of that world. And I think that's true in all of those books. Could you respond a little bit to why that kind of trope is important in those stories and in fantasy especially?
Well, I was going to say about the diversity issues, I'm the odd person out here because I'm the whitest. you know, okay, so I have Russian Jewish background, but it doesn't appear physically. And I'm very aware of authentic voices, and it's wonderful that authentic voices tell these stories to kids. Now, I don't count the Tudor dynasty as being immigrants or, you know, minorities. But I felt when I first started to write this book, it was just when these kids were being incarcerated down on the border. And this just broke my heart. And if I may give a little plug to a great foundation, the Young Foundation in Chicago, that just won a UNICEF award about a year ago. They provide legal help to four-year-olds who have to appear in a court before a judge. Can you imagine being three or four? So I felt that I had to put an immigration stream in present day. And there's been other instances. But, you know, it's really better, I do believe, if a person like Jen can write these stories. I don't want to eclipse their voice. But that doesn't mean I can't have references to this in my book. And so I think that's all I wanted to say about it. Oh, the other thing was a diversity issue. Is there's a character who runs all through these books. His name is Miles. And he is a quadriplegic. He's in a wheelchair. He was born with CP. And he was inspired by a young guy. I always used to, I still do occasionally, audit classes at Harvard. And I was auditing this wonderful class. And next to me in the big Seaver Hall at Harvard was this boy who came in a wheelchair, you know, an automatic wheelchair. And he can't write. He barely, I mean, understanding him was very difficult. He was a freshman at Harvard. And I based the character on, in this book, I call him Miles. The kid's real name is Kevin. He just graduated with a PhD from Stanford. And he, his first job is with the National Institute of Health working on disability stuff. And he was a, such an inspiration to me that I had to have something in there for kids who are disabled. Yeah.
And that I think that representation kind of ties, so the bullying that happens to both Miles in your book and to Jen's character, to Zane, is based on disability, and it's something that's so important to see represented in the, in yeah. these stories.
And this is Anti-Bullying Month.
Oh, that's right.
It is. Oh. It is. And the first place I went to look for stuff was Melania's website. I do not advise that. There are many other places that give you a lot more information, particularly for middle grade teachers. Really good resources.
Wonderful. So did anyone want to talk a little bit about kind of the bullying in their stories and how that, that, that weakness and the strength, how that kind of played out in these books?
I mean, I feel like in, you know, in middle grade, there is kind of a trope. Well, I don't want to say trope because it sounds kind of negative, but there's a trend where, you know, the protagonist is a bit of a loner and outcast. We see that in Percy Jackson. We see that in Harry Potter. And then they come into this great power where they realize, you know, they're the only one who can save the world, pretty much. And that's really exciting because I think when kids are at that age, you know, they're... unfortunately is a lot of bullying that goes on in schools. And I know I was never like bullied, but I was definitely like kind of the weird girl. Like all I did was read like my books for my friends, like as lame as that sounds. But I feel like I did spend a lot of time alone. I just spent like a lot of time, you know, kind of reflecting on that sense of, you know, just feeling like I didn't quite belong. And I think it's that feeling of not quite belonging that, you know, really kicks off a lot of middle grade stories and eventually finding your place in the world. And for The Dragonwear specifically, I just took what I loved about middle grade fantasy and what I'd seen in Harry Potter and Percy Jackson, and I gave that kind of power and awakening to a girl who looked like me. I don't want to say it's kind of a trope, but I do think it is a little bit of a trend that we see in middle grade, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it, especially, you know, if you're writing from a different kind of background, you kind of give a different perspective or a new spin to that kind of trope.
No, I think it can be really powerful to see kids who maybe are experiencing bullying and finding that sort of strength in themselves that might come from those... from those experiences sometimes.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. I mean, I often say, you know, this journey through life as a human is not for the faint of heart. It's hard, it's challenging, it can be tragic, it can be beautiful, it can be joyful, and kids experience all of that as well. And so whether it's bullying or it's something else, I think all of us are facing challenges on a daily basis. Even if you're looking at everyone's highlight reel on, you know, Instagram or Twitter, you think, oh, everyone else is having this really easy, cush life. And that's not the case. We know that, right? And on top of the bullying, when you look at kids, and I can remember feeling this when I was young, you know, what power do kids have? They're told when to eat, when to get up, when to go to school, when to do their homework, when to go to practice. And so I think that there is this push and this pull that kids experience in coming into their own decision-making and this power differential that exists between them and adults. And so I think that so often you see in middle grade fiction kids coming into these adventures where they can utilize power in a different way. And what does that feel like? And it's not just physical power, but it's mental, emotional, spiritual power. And how do they utilize that? And where do they stumble? And I think so much of it is really actually reflective of being an adult, too.
So I think we are out of time for questions here, which means it's time to turn to any kids or teens who have questions. If any young people would like to ask a question, we have a microphone right here in the middle, and our authors would love to hear from any young people who are here today.
We would. Don't be shy.
Yeah.
Scream from your chair if you want to.
Oh, yeah, library regular.
How do you choose your ideas?
That is such a great question. And you know what? It's interesting because I have visited thousands of kids across the country, and so many of them ask about where we get our ideas and our inspiration. And so I don't know if you were here at the beginning, but I talked about how we have these volcanoes in New Mexico that really inspired this entire series, trilogy, really, for the Storm Runner. And I often tell kids, you know, you can come up with inspiration is in your own backyard, literally. And, you know, you and I could sit and talk for 20 seconds and we could come up with some amazing fantasy idea just being in this room and what's in here. And so I think it's about letting your imagination just go and don't judge your ideas. I think so often as creators and artists and writers, we think, oh, no, people think that's dumb. Or, no, that's not a very good idea. But you just have to keep pushing the idea further and further and further. And then you have to really be connected to it. You have to really love it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We got one brave kid. We got another one coming. Yeah.
Where do you get your inspiration for your characters?
I think I get my inspiration just from daily life. I've written people into the story that, you know, I take their characteristics, you know, just like my friends and family, and I put them into the characters who are in the story. You know, I won't name names, but it's just the people who I know because I'm writing from what I know. And especially with the Dragon Warrior, I took, you know, the people who I grew up with, you know, I saw going to Chinese school. I put those characters into the story. There's one point where there's this boy in the story who, you know, he's being raised to be this really brave warrior, but then he confesses that he actually wants to be an actor. So that's it's a little bit of like a twist on, I guess, Chinese culture. You know, we're kind of told, or a lot of young children are told, you know, you have to be like a doctor, an engineer when you're older. But a lot of them, like me, secretly want to be a creative. So it's just, I think what I wanted to do was I really wanted to write the people who I knew in my life, and I wanted to give them magic and power, and I wanted to write them into a fantasy story. Thank you.
So across books, did you already have the ideas all planned out, or did you change it a lot while writing?
Oh, boy. Loaded question.
How long do you have?
I don't have it all planned out at all, and things change. I make a kind of what you call a rough sketch. I call it an outline, and it's very crude. It's beginning, middle, and end. That's what I actually write. And make a few notes in between. Then as I go, I'm a dedicated outliner. And as I go along, I make more outlines. So by the end of the book, I can have maybe 18 outlines. And they're just like kind of roadmaps to get me from one point to the other. But you can always get off the main highway and really find some great surprises.
Excellent questions. I think this young lady was standing up. Yeah.
Why don't people put deaths in their books?
Huh. Death? Oh. Why do or why don't? Why do?
Why don't?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think they do. I think that, so there is some in the Storm Runner. And I actually got some emails about that. Some people were not happy. So I said, you have to keep reading and just see what happens because it's fantasy. So there is. I mean, I think that we do see that, definitely. Don't you guys think?
I think we see it more and more, actually.
Yeah.
I think middle grade is getting darker.
Yeah.
But I have it easy, for example, in these books, because all the historical figures have already died. Oh. People know what's going to happen with those guys. Yeah.
There's more than one death in the Dragon War. We'll just put it that way. Yeah.
Maybe what a good question.
Though. Just read these books, I think, it sounds like.
Was there ever any roadblocks when you were writing?
Oh, lots. And you know, I think for writers, too, Kate and I were talking about this earlier, but you do so much in isolation. You spend your day alone in your head and with these characters, and they really kind of become very, very real for you. And they fight you. I mean, I know my characters really struggle against a lot of stuff where I want. You know, Catherine's talking about her roadmap, and I'm going to wager, I haven't asked these two authors, but that their characters, once they let them take control, the story usually goes in a better direction. Mm-hmm. And so as writers, we're a little bit of control freaks. And I know for me, when I let the character do something and say the thing they want to say, and I'm thinking, oh my God, really? No, we're not going to go there. And so I'm having this conversation with the character. And then once they do the thing they want, it's always a better story. But oh my God, roadblocks galore.
Yeah.
How about you guys?
Do we have enough time for one more question? All right, let's sneak in one more question. This young lady has been standing over here in the corner. Come on over, honey.
Did any of your books get picked by filmmakers besides Catherine?
What was it?
Did any of your books get picked by filmmakers?
Oh. An adult book of mine I like home grown up books, might become a film. Yeah, I talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Legend of the Guardians. But what about you guys?
Yeah, so Stormrunner's been optioned. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
We have to keep so many secrets as authors.
I'm not going to say anything right now.
Yeah.
I will say, I think.
Stay tuned.
All of these would make incredible movies. So if anybody has anybody that they know, feel free to put this in their ear, because I would love to see all of these on the screen. But let's all please say thank you to these incredible
thank
authors
you.
For joining us
you.
Today. They will all be signing out in front, so give them just a moment, and then please come join us and buy their books and have them sign, and please buy Ben's book as well. Thank you for joining us.